Hi, the Potadlai Guardianship.
Yeah, Alvarez.
Rhonda, Public Guardian.
Erin McGavin, Public Guardian.
Good morning. This is Debbie Ank, Assistant Attorney General.
Thank you, Debbie. All right. Do we have any other members of the state employees, I suppose I'll call them?
This is Mike Hinthorn. I'm with Judicial's Budget Office.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us today, for taking the time. Appreciate it.
I'm sorry, who was that last? I couldn't hear.
Mike
Hinthorn.
Judicial's Budget
Sorry,
Office.
I still can't hear. Mike, was that Mike something?
Mike Hinthorn,
yeah,
from State Judicial. And do we have any members of the public?
Hi, my name is Ann McKenzie, and I am a guardian with Silver Key Senior Services in Colorado Springs.
Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
And this is Maureen Welch, member of the public.
Hi, Maureen.
Connie Raley with the Arc of Aurora.
Welcome. All right, do we have any other members of the public or anyone else who would like to introduce themselves? Okay. Well, the first item on our agenda is approval of the meeting minutes. Have the commissioners had an opportunity to review the minutes?
Yes.
All right, are there any edits or changes? Hearing none, I'll hear a motion to approve.
Janet Woods, I move to approve the minutes.
Do we have a second?
Cheryl, second.
All right, the minutes are approved. I see on our agenda that the chair report is coming up next, but Mr. Hedwood, I'm wondering if you, this time of year, I imagine you're busy. I'm wondering if you would like me to move that agenda item up so that you can. We can start with the budget issues. Mr. Hinthorn?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
I'm just wondering if, based on your schedule, if you would like to have the director report and budget update moved up so that you can do your presentation and get back to your regular job.
Oh, yeah, that would be fine. That's okay with you all.
Yeah, Sophia, would you start with the director's report?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. So I don't have any updates regarding the budget information that was provided previously. We did have to submit our fiscal year 22 budget request. That deadline was prior to me being able to present it to the commission for approval. But Mr. Hinthorn is here from Judicial Budget Unit and can answer any questions that the commission may have related to the budget request or the monthly summaries that were provided for November and December of 2020. Basically, the budget request for fiscal year 22 is just a continuation of the prior year. We are not asking for a general fund amount because at this point we're able to fund ourselves with the cash funds related to the court filing fees and the court filing fees and costs. In the report, I did mention that Hugh and I were working on a possible budget amendment to hire an attorney, and that just isn't feasible. So I will not be making that budget amendment request in January. And just as an update, there was a JBC briefing hearing on December 8th, and the committee had no questions for the Office of Public Guardianship. So I am still preparing for my presentation to the JBC this Thursday. And the time is now known. It's from 4:40 p.m. to 5 p.m. This Thursday, December 17th. And with that, I guess maybe let's just ask, see if there's any questions related to the budget request or monthly summary, since we have Mr. Henthorn here and he needs to go.
Well, commissioners, do you have any questions just right off the bat? If not, I'd like to ask Mr. Henthorn if he could just go over sort of a, you know, high-level overview and just sort of explain what these requests are. Okay, hearing none. So, are you just able to take us through this on a, you know, a sort of a 101 level, kind of step-by-step, so we can get a full grasp of exactly what's going on?
Yeah. Are you specifically talking about the submission, the budget submission you want me to go through?
Yeah, if you're able to do that.
Yeah. So do you all have the budget request in front of you?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah, so do I.
So, this year's request was pretty basic. It is, like Sophia mentioned, it is a continuation budget. So we start, if you go to page 5, I believe it is, of the budget request, that's Schedule D. On the top right corner, it says Schedule D. Does everybody see that?
Yes.
So with continuation budget, I mean, with all budget requests, we start with the prior year's base, the starting base. That is what we start building your budget with. So with the continuation budget, it's essentially we're not going to have any decision items or any major requests to add on. So the only thing that we'll build into that starting base is you'll see the common policy adjustments and para-incremental adjustments. The common policy adjustments, those are basically just state-level common policies related to salaries. You'll have just some, you know, health, life, dental adjustments. If the rates changed, you'll have some adjustments there to get you to cover those statewide amounts that are authorized. And so that's the only thing that's being added right now for FY22 to your budget is these common policy increases, which we just follow the state on those. It's just a calculation that the state provides us, and we add those into the budget. And so that builds what the request for FY22 will be, which is the $738,268. And you'll see that all of that, again, Sophia mentioned this is all a cash fund request. There's no general fund dollars. So this will all be funded with the fees that are generated through the filing fees. So that's pretty much it. The personal services allocation and the operating allocation, that really doesn't, that's just kind of how it got entered into the system. It's not necessarily set in stone that way. It's just a way it gets entered into the system and separated out. But this is, that $738,268 will be, if approved, will be the appropriation that you will have to work with in FY22.
Okay. So it seems pretty, you know, pretty standard, and that the budget's been used you know, as expected and as should have been in the last year. So, is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, that is correct. Yeah, this is a pretty basic request. Not much goes into it. Nothing's being added in or taken out. It's the only thing being added in is just the state's common policies.
Okay. And, you know, this isn't an issue. This hasn't been an issue. But what if the fees don't come through with the way that they're expected to? Will that impact the overall budget situation?
It will. I mean, it would eventually. You know, if the fees take a dramatic cut, well, not a cut, but a decrease, they just don't come in at the same level, we'll definitely have to manage that and review it. I think the way the cash funds work, there's a fund balance that has been built up. So if there are some decreases in the fees coming in to the fund, you can rely on that fund balance for a little bit until we can figure out what's causing the fee decrease or if there's a way we can go to the General Assembly to address that. But I think right now the fund is in pretty good shape. So even if fees did go down a little bit, I believe that the fund would be able to carry the current appropriation.
That's good news. Do any of the other commissioners have questions?
This is Commissioner Bennett Woods. I don't, but thank you very much for that summary. I appreciate it. But there's a lot of pages there for not a lot of change. So I appreciate you walking up.
And this is Commissioner Chiat. Likewise, thanks for your work.
You're welcome. There are definitely a lot of schedules that we have to submit, even though, yes, not a lot of changes. Luckily, it's mostly automated.
Okay. Are there any other questions? All right, hearing none, you know, I really appreciate your time and thank you for just, you know, walking us through this. You know, it's simple for you in the office, but it really is helpful for us to be able to get just a quick summary and, you know, to point us to the page and really explain these things. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. Did someone just join us?
Yes, this is Jim Tatton.
Hello, Mr. Tatton. Welcome.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. If there are no more questions, then suppose we can let you get back to your day. Thank you so much.
All right. Sounds good. If you have any questions, you can just shoot me an email or you an email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be great. And that goes for members of the public, too. If you have any questions, you know, that you come up with later, please feel free to email Sophia or myself, and we'll endeavor to get the questions answered. All right, thank you.
All right, thank you.
All right. So, Sophia, do you have more for your director's report? Sophia?
Yeah, same mute button, sorry. my understanding is the commission would need to approve that fiscal year budget request. I don't know if we need to address that now or later because we also have that attachment 3, the Office of State Auditor Annual Financial Audit and Response Letter that I believe the commission needs to approve that management representation letter that was provided because of the financial oversight policies in place for the commission.
Yes. And have the commissioners had an opportunity to review that letter?
This is Commissioner Bennett Woods. I have reviewed that letter. And Sophia, if you could just explain what this is this a standard process from the state? Is this separate from an independent audit?
Yes, correct. So this is the annual audit that the Office of the State Auditor completes. And in years past, Judicial has just kind of done one letter that says, yes, we're in compliance. All of our state agencies are in compliance. And so this year it's a separate entity letter. So this is standard. This is my understanding. If you scroll like through that document, you'll see that there are certain things marked out. Those are things that didn't apply to the Office of Public Guardianship, but the state auditors still require, you know, that information to be in there so that they know it doesn't apply to the OPG. And if you have more questions, this doesn't need to be signed until January at some point. So if you have more questions that are more technical questions, I can ask the judicial controller to appear and answer some questions, or you can direct me to contact him for those questions and get back to the commission.
No, considering there were no findings of any merit, then I certainly don't have any questions. I just want to make sure I understood the context of the report. So thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, I similarly do not have any questions, just because there were no findings to note. Commissioner Zinn or Commissioner Chayette, do you have any questions on this?
This is Commissioner Zinn. I do not.
And I do not.
Well, then, I hear a motion to approve the letter today.
I can move to approve the letter.
Okay, I'll second it then.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, the motion passes, so the letter is approved.
This is Debbie, and then you need a separate action on the budget request approval.
Okay, budget request approval. All right. Is there any further discussion among the commissioners on the budget request? I do not have any. This is essentially about as simple as a budget request can get.
Yeah.
All right, then do we have a motion to approve the budget request?
This is Commissioner Bennett Woods. I'll move to approve the budget request.
I can second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, the budget request passes. All right. So I think that is all the budget items we needed to approve today. Is that correct, Debbie?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. So, Sophia, I'll send it back over to you if you have more to report.
Thank you. I just have a couple of updates from the report that went out last week. Down on page 3 of the director report, the paragraph talking about the CAPS checks, those were completed on my end for the public guardian, and they are all clear to continue working with the Office of Public Guardianship. And down further on page 5, section G, intake eligibility, that section, we actually have 20 active guardianships. We had 22, two clients have passed away, and they weren't coded correctly. in our case management system. So I need to update that we have 20 active clients that we are serving right now. And those are the only updates I have to the report that went out last week.
Sophia, for the,
oh, I'm sorry.
No, please go ahead, Commissioner.
Sophia, could you just clarify the numbers a little bit? So is 77 registered referrals the total number received? Is that inclusive of currently active guardianships? Is it inclusive of accepted cases? Are the active guardianships included in the accepted cases? I'm trying to figure out what the denominators are for those. It's not very clear to me. Or are those very distinct process categories?
Sure, sorry. Well, part of the problem is that now that you're asking me, 77 registered referral users is what that should be. So those are people that have registered on our website to submit referrals. So that's not related to, like, the number of cases that we've accepted, because a registered user could submit more than one referral. We've accepted 47 referrals, that 47 accepted cases, and that includes the 20 active. The remaining out of the 20, that means there's they are kind of in the court process, so we're waiting for a petition to be filed, or we're waiting just for the court proceedings to be appointed.
So the incomplete referrals, where are they counted?
Those are separate. So those are completely separate. An additional 5 referrals that are pending our process, pending our ability to accept them or decline them, because they haven't completed all of the information necessary. So those are kind of in a hold until we receive more information, which we are in contact with the referring party to get that information.
So are they considered registered?
Yes, those. Excuse me. Yes, they would be, well, they'd be considered as a referral, but not necessarily, the number won't add up to 77 because, again, the registered referral users, they could refer more than one case.
Okay.
Or they could have been registered, or they registered and haven't filed or submitted a referral.
So those aren't really referrals, they're users?
Yes, my terminology is not the best there. So they should be registered referral users.
Okay, so because this is a public document, and if I'm not understanding it, it's probably not clear to other people understanding it. So I would just recommend that in your next director's report, you maybe report these numbers out a little bit differently so that they add up to something. So it's pretty clear what falls in what category in terms of the total scope of cases in process. Because I would read referrals. To me, referrals should add up to, all that other stuff should add up to total referrals somewhere in there. So referrals process should be different from registered users and that sort of thing. So if you could just give that some thought so that it's a little clearer, it's a little more clear how to interpret those, that would be really useful for me.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion of the director's report? Or anything else to report, Sophia?
Okay. This is Deb Bennett Woods again. I just want to mention that I attended the University of Colorado panel presentation that Sophia did for the Center for Bioethics. and the humanities, and not only was it a very interesting and informative panel, she joined two other folks to talk about guardianship, but it was very well attended. I sat one, it was a Zoom call, but at one point in time I saw there was at least 120 participants, so I just wanted to first of all, say thank you to Sophia for doing that, because I actually was the one that was called on that, and I referred that, bounced it over to Sophia. And she did a much better job than I would have, and it was really a terrific outreach specifically to the healthcare community and the bioethics community that handles these cases directly when folks are in the hospital or in long-term care situations. So of the things she listed on there, that was a really nice community outreach.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. It was fun.
Lots of good questions. They're a great group to work with.
This is Maureen Welch. Could I ask a point of clarification?
Sure.
I'm curious with the deaths. I believe under statute, those the guardianships terminate upon death. So what happens when you do have a client pass away? Who wraps up their estate type thing, since this is the first time we've had a death report or captured in the director's report? Thank you.
Yes, one instance the client had family that we were able to work with. That client also had a conservator in place. So between the family and the conservator, they wrapped that up, of course, with whatever assistance our public guardian needed to provide. The other client had no one, but the guardian was able to work with, I believe, the facility to just provide guidance, and the facility ended up, I think, contacting the public administrator's office and also our public guardian to get him a proper cremation, I believe, in the end. And yes, both of those cases we filed motions to terminate due to the death ward, which I think we've received orders on both of those now.
Okay, thank you. Doesn't the conservator's letters expire upon death as well? Maybe Marco, I don't know. I'm curious how the conservator had the right to settle the first case.
So I heard this is Commissioner Chayette. I actually dropped the call and just got back in, so I missed that whole discussion, and I heard my name and conservator, so my apologies.
You want me to restate the question, Madam Chair?
Just restate the question, and then we're going to need to move on.
Okay, great. We were just talking about the two clients who passed away. They were under wards under SNP. And Sophia reported out that for the first death, the client had a conservator, and that conservator was with the family member. And my point of clarification was, don't the conservator's letters also expire upon death, and how did they have the right to settle the estate? And then also, Sophia shared that the second guardian, the guardian worked with the facility to provide guidance and had a public administrator settle the final affairs. And I'm just curious, I think this might be something we want to track in data, just to keep track of what happens when clients do pass away. So my question is, do the conservator letters terminate upon death, and should a guardian be doing anything after a client passes away under statute? Thank you.
Yeah, so the answer is no, a conservatorship does not expire upon death like a guardianship does, because there is a time by statute to be able to deal with the administration of the conservatorship estate before it terminates. And it's over 60 days that you have to deal with that. And then as far as the guardianship terminating upon death, there's always going to be, you know, some, you know, I'll call it work, but that would need to be done immediately upon death, let's say, particularly if there's not a conservator. So there's some latitude within the statute, but the conservatorship is a totally different track than the guardianship when the protected person passes away.
All right, thank you. All right, Sophia, do you have anything else for a director's report?
I do not, thank you.
Well, thank you for that report and for getting us the budget information as you did. Appreciate it. Okay, so we're going to go return to the chair report. We have a few issues to discuss. First, I do want to say that I was able to run a CAPS check on Sophia, and she is clear to continue as director of office. The second issue that we need to talk about is Commissioner Kelly. Commissioner Kelly is heartbroken to have to do this, and you know, I was hoping she'd be able to make the meeting today to tell you this. But due to a personal issue, she has to resign from the commission, effective essentially immediately. This was to be her last meeting. Again, she has been very committed to this. She, you know, really would do anything to stay on, but it's just an unavoidable conclusion that she has to resign from the commission. So certainly, you know, sad for her, sad for all of us. And really do wish her well in the future. So that does raise another issue. And, well, first, should I say, are there any comments from the commissioners on that information?
I just wish she was here for us to wish her well, and perhaps we can, as a commission, communicate with her by a card or something just to thank her for her great service and dedication.
I second that.
Yeah, I think that would be nice. Karen is truly one of the nice people you'll meet in the world.
Yeah.
So the other issue that this raises is that she is vice chair. This was to be my last meeting as chair, and she was supposed to take over. So clearly, that can't happen. So, you know, essentially we have talked to Debbie and we have three options because we need to have a motion to have a chair in place for after this meeting. So the options are that I can stay on, that we can elect another person to serve as chair, or that I can stay on for a period of time until another person is prepared to come in as chair.
I have a question.
So I'm going to open. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. are you able to stay on as chair?
I am able to stay on. You know, I don't want to be chair in perpetuity. I could certainly stay on for a period of you know, a period of time or for the next year. But, you know, I want to open it up to a commission. I take no position on, you know, essentially anything. I want the commission to decide what they think the best thing to do moving forward, and also who, if anyone, is able to do it.
And Chair, do you want that discussion and nomination to happen now or after? Did you say after the meeting? I missed that piece.
If possible, to happen now. I understand that this is a big piece of information. So if the other commissioners need some time to, you know, think and make a final decision in January, I think that would be fine. But Debbie, you should correct me if I'm wrong here. I think we would at least need a motion to have my term extended so that there could be a chair for January, if that's the case.
That's correct. We would at least need to know who is our chairperson for our next meeting before we leave today.
Well, if
am I understanding, Commissioner Lefko, that you are willing to serve for both for as much as another year, and that you don't have a strong preference or any limitation that we need to consider on that?
No. Not a strong preference or limitations. This is an extraordinary circumstance, and I'm prepared to be flexible to accommodate that circumstance.
Given that we are down a commissioner, and that will need to be filled, speaking for myself, I appreciate you saying that you could serve for another term, another year as chair. So that's why I asked that question earlier. So I would feel comfortable nominating you to serve one more full term, since you're willing and able to do that.
Yeah, and I would be fine for that. It really is whatever you want for the, commission.
Do you recall, Chair, how long approximately it took to fill the last vacancy? And my recollection is that, Chair Kelly, that her and I are the two lawyer and non-lawyer governor appointees. So the process may be a little bit more involved, but I that's about all I'm speculating that as far as how long might it take to fill that, I suppose.
Yeah, Commissioner Bennett Woods, you may have a better recollection of this than I do.
I was just going to say it took far too long to fill the last one.
Yeah, I'm recalling a few months.
Yeah, it was a judicial, and I appreciate your position, Commissioner Lesko, and very much appreciate your willingness to continue to serve as a matter of continuity. And if that's really something you're willing to do, I certainly would support that. But I do think we need to be, it may work differently through the governor's office. That was a judicial appointment last time. But I do think we need to be assertive in getting an appointment so that we can get back to full commission status as quickly as possible.
This is Debbie.
Yes, I would agree with that.
In my experience, the governor's office, including our newest governor, also takes several months to fill vacancies. I am still in touch with Commissioner Kelly to help her navigate that process to submit her resignation to the right person. And she's actually already written that letter, so it should go to the governor's office today to kickstart that process.
Okay. Is there anything that we need to do specifically, Debbie, to request that, to urge it, to keep it at the forefront of someone's attention?
I'm not entirely sure. I know that when former Commissioner Sherry Caton resigned, we sent a letter to Judicial to say, hey, we want somebody, and this is kind of what we're looking for. So it's possible if it looks like they're going to drag their feet, we could do that again.
Yeah, that was after a period of time. It took numerous contacts and the letter and requests and interventions to move that along. So if there's an effective way to start that process sooner rather than later, I would be in favor of doing that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not aware really of anything that moves the governor's office if they're dragging their feet, but I will ask around and find out if anybody has some better experiences with getting vacancies filled quickly.
Thank you.
Can we go ahead, should we go ahead and nominate, or have a motion rather, for Chair Lesko to serve another term so we are not vacant in January?
Yes, if that's what the commission wants, then a motion would need to be made, and we would also need to elect a new vice chair.
Can the vice chair equally be vacant for January, or is it required? In other words, unless there's someone who wants to fill the vice chair, I'm just curious about the protocols on that.
I don't see a problem with leaving a vacancy there, but you know, the pool of people who is present today is going to be the pool of people who's available to serve in that role. So I don't know that you gain anything from delaying, except for some time to consider whether you can take on the role. Anyway, the short answer is no, I don't think you have to nominate a permanent vice chair today.
Well, this is Commissioner Lesko. You know, I completely understand if people need some time to consider whether or not they can take the position of a vice chair even. It is a time commitment. So I'm wondering, just from a fling in the, you know, the room, I guess I'll say, should we just go ahead and, you know, nominate a chair to get that in place so that we can effectively run in January and then revisit, have the vice chair election in the agenda for that? Does that make sense to people?
It does.
Okay.
Very much so.
Because, I mean,
may I ask a question? What is the time? I understand the chair well, but for the vice chair, just so I know I can consider it, but just for the meeting and the other commissioners as a whole, what are vice chair's time commitments, obviously besides filling in for the chair when the chair is unavailable?
I can tell you that I found them to be extremely minimal.
Okay.
You know, review documents and sign them. You. But it's a pretty minimal time commitment.
In that case, I will put a motion to the commissioners to nominate Chair Lesko to serve one more term as the chair of the commission.
Mr. Bennett, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So I will continue my term as chair.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And I really do think we should, you know, get a card together to thank Commissioner Kelly. I'm not sure how we do that in the COVID era, but we'll find a way. All right. And so we'll revisit the vice chair conversation in January. And, you know, just please, you know, look at your schedule. I actually do, you know, appreciate the consideration of time commitment to any of the chair or vice chair positions. So please take a look, and we'll I think we're going to have to reach a decision in January.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you.
Right, the next item on the agenda, and Mark, I believe you have to get off in 10 minutes, so I may throw it over to your feedback or responses first so that you can get that in, is the role of the commission. Now, what we'd need to do is modify the amend the bylaws to decide what we want a role of the commission to be. A few days ago, I sent out a draft that I had Debbie look over of the oversight role of the commission. And this is not necessarily an expression of my opinion, but this is where I went through my notes and I tried to write that, and I tried to sort of document what over the last year I've seen or heard commissioners say they would need to feel comfortable in their oversight role or role as a commissioner. You know, this is what I heard. This isn't necessarily what people said. So certainly intend this to be a working document that is fully open to feedback and modification of how the commission should operate. But I do think that we need to really nail down what our role is because the office is up and running and we are at a point where if the commission's role isn't clear, I am concerned that's going to hinder the operations of the office. So did everyone have an opportunity? Please go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, this is Commissioner Bennett Woods. I think this is very clear, and I think it goes a long way to what it is that we need to have in place. And actually, the only suggestion that I had given the meeting today is that we should probably, I don't remember seeing in the fiscal oversight, and I'm trying to speed read through here today, anything about reviewing the state or independent financial audits, reviewing and approving those, that should probably be included under fiscal oversight.
I think that's a good point. That is something that I did not consider. I'm just typing that into the document. Do the commissioners have any other comments?
I seem to have lost my place. Can you, do you know the number on the PDF where this is? I don't know how I lost it.
I think this was sent out differently than the other documents. Sophia, do you know how this was sent out?
Yeah,
yes, this was sent.
Yep, sorry, I'm looking at the wrong thing.
What? And I think so I've got to open it back up. Was this sent by Debbie?
No. Mm-mm.
No.
I'll forward it to you.
This was, I believe it was sent by America as a, or no, I'm sorry. It was probably sent by me as a part two to the initial email sent to the commission.
Sorry, on Friday it was sent at 4:02 by Sophia.
I must apologize. I missed this, and I see it here from Friday afternoon. Was it? So, unfortunately, I'm going to have to read through this and to be able to give you any intelligent opinions.
Okay. No, I think that, you know, this is not something, we've taken this long, this is not something to look into, so I would be happy to carry this over to the January meeting.
My apologies, or at least for me to be able to read it and get back with the commission.
No apologies necessary. Okay, well, I've made a note of Commissioner Bennett Wood's suggestion to include audit documents in the financial oversight section, and we'll take this back up in January once the commissioners have had a time to thoroughly review.
Thank you.
All right. So, you know, that is the end of my chair report. Are there any questions before we continue? Hearing none, I understand this is something Sophia asked me about a few weeks ago. We're going to have a presentation from one of the public guardians because I think it would be helpful for the commission to sort of see and understand how the office is operating. So, Sophia, do you want to turn that over to whichever of your guardians will be making the presentation?
Yes, thank you. Yes, I've asked Camille Price, one of our public guardians, to give a brief kind of summary about a client that she's assisted and has really impacted dramatically his life and the way he's living today. So, Ms. Price, if you don't mind, could you do your presentation?
Thank you, Sophia. Good morning, everyone. I'm Camille Price, and I'm a public guardian with the Colorado Office of Public Guardianship. I'd like to share with you one of my cases to show you how impactful public guardianship support and advocacy have been for an at-risk and vulnerable person in our community. The case I'd like to share with you today is my client, whom I will refer to as John, which is not his real name. John's progress towards safety, health, and wellness has been extraordinary since receiving a public guardian in August of 2020. John is a 28-year-old man who had the diagnosis of pervasive developmental disorder. He was born in Denver and experienced lifelong difficulties with the symptoms of his condition, which included severe disruptive and assaultive behaviors. In his family home, John was considered to be a danger to the other children in the home, and his parents became overwhelmed and unable to manage John's condition. Ultimately, John's behavioral difficulties were too much for his family to manage, and John was reported to have been relinquished by his parents to child welfare services in his childhood. John then spent the remainder of his childhood at the El Pueblo Boys Ranch. When John aged out of the child welfare system, he was left to live on his own. John's family had disconnected from him. John was not provided with support services and was not able to maintain housing or stability and was homeless for the next several years. During these years, he had no support services to manage his medication, and he went in and out of emergency rooms and jail, where his medications were changed constantly due to John's inability to advocate for himself, and this only worsened his behavioral symptoms. On his own, John was vulnerable to predation and exploitation. He experienced sexual assault and was also hit by a car when he was walking alone in a parking lot at night. When he was hit by a car, he ended up in the hospital for several months recovering from a traumatic brain injury while in a coma. John was completely unable to protect himself from the dangers of living on the street. During John's homelessness, he accumulated numerous criminal charges, ranging from theft, assault, and trespassing. He had numerous criminal cases in several different counties and accumulated thousands of dollars in court fees. Additionally, John was reported to have called 911 over 300 times in 2019. Due to his assaultive behaviors, John had been banned from all homeless shelters in Denver and had been evicted from several assisted living facilities. And despite being registered as a client in the human service agencies in Denver, John was not receiving appropriate services or support to his safety, health, and well-being. When I went out to meet John for the first time, I found him in a hotel on Colfax Avenue in Denver. He had recently been discharged to the hotel from hospital. When I entered John's hotel room, it was immediately evident that John was unable to manage living independently. As his public guardian, I was able to immediately take John to the hospital for a thorough physical examination. It found that John was experiencing acute respiratory failure and diabetes that was not treated. These health issues were addressed, and John now receives ongoing regular assessment and treatment for his health condition. As his public guardian, I was also able to have John complete an updated IQ assessment and neuropsychiatric assessment for the purpose of updating his diagnoses and treatment plan. John was given new diagnoses, which included autism, disruptive mood disorder, and post-traumatic stress disorder. With John's updated IQ assessment, I was able to have John gain his intellectual and developmental disability determination and to use this necessary determination to apply for an emergency developmental disability waiver. The developmental disability waiver will allow John to receive the necessary and appropriate services to support his health, safety, and wellness. While we are awaiting the approval of John's developmental disability waiver, I was able to use John's IDD determination to apply for and receive emergency mill levy funds. I was able to use these funds to pay for a host home for John. Within a month of having a guardian, John was placed in a host home in Denver. John has now been in this host home for 3 months, and this is the longest period of stability and wellness that he's ever had in his life. His host home provider is providing 24/7 care, support, and supervision for John while teaching him valuable life skills. These mill levy funds are also providing for John to receive one-on-one behavioral counseling for the purpose of building John's life skills and independence. Since John has found stability in his new home, which refers to as his forever home, I've been able to work with John and his psychiatrist towards updating and modifying his medication regimen in accordance with John's updated diagnosis. This has resulted in John having improved health and a reduction in the uncomfortable side effects from his old medications that were no longer appropriate for his condition. As John's public guardian, I have also been able to intervene in John's many criminal cases. I have connected him to public defenders in each county where he has cases, and at this point, I have advocated and succeeded in getting John's many cases dismissed, and I was able to get him off of probation in two counties. At this point, he has only one case remaining with a public defender assisting, and John has not had any new criminal charges since the appointment of a guardian. John now works that he loves his new home. In his host home, John is included in all activities and it is a family environment. John was included in Thanksgiving festivities, and he reported that it was the first time he could remember ever having a Thanksgiving dinner. He is currently enjoying the holidays and looking forward to spending Christmas with his host home family. In conclusion, I would like to express my gratitude to the OPG Commission and to the people of Denver for supporting OPG work. I'm looking forward to continuing to serve at-risk and vulnerable people in our community. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that case summary, I guess I'll call it. It really is a detailed work. It's a complex case. I've worked with a lot of clients who've been in similar positions, and that can be difficult to do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. That was a really heartening thing to hear.
thank you for the opportunity.
Appreciate it. Are there any other questions or comments? Well, I guess I have one question, Sophia. Does this sort of indicate the you know, complexity of all cases, or, you know, the majority of cases, or most, less intensive than that?
I would say, so this was our very first case we were appointed on, and mm-hmm. I would say that this probably, so far, our most complex. And Camille's done a great job in the very short amount of time of really advocating for him and getting services in place, having people follow up with the other services to make sure that things are getting done. So there were days that Camille, you know, it's a wonderful story because now he's very stable, but there were times that she didn't really elaborate on that it was extremely stressful. He was, you know, getting kicked out of hotels, getting kicked out of other temporary placements that we were trying to find for him because he didn't have funds and didn't have services in place. It was very complex, and there were days that, you know, Camille was on the with him with our client several times. So I'd say we probably have two or three cases that are similar to this that are just really we kind of, when we get the case, they're in a kind of bad situation, and we really have to hustle to try and get some services and things in place. And we have some people that are living in the community that, as least restrictive, they're still in their homes or apartments, which seem to be going pretty well. And then we have other cases, of course, where clients are in hospitals or facilities. So those clients usually are less complex cases because they are stable and in a facility.
Hi, this is Maureen Welch. Could I ask a follow-up question for that case? Hello?
Madam Chair,
I just had a follow-up question for the case.
Sure, one follow-up question, yeah.
Sure. I'm just curious,
you're about to go to public comment.
This is kind of my arena, but my nonprofit works in as well. For ongoing services, has the Guardian been able to secure a permanent developmental disability Medicaid waiver slot so that the mill levy money isn't being used for the host home, because that would be more permanent funding?
Sophia, would you like me to speak to that?
Yes, go ahead. Thank you.
Oh, hi, Maureen. We have applied for the developmental disability waiver, and it's been 2 months into the application, and it's still being processed by HCPCS, and we're awaiting the determination for that. So we're hoping. It was an emergency application, so it has special consideration because he was homeless. So we're really hoping for that waiver to come through.
Very good. Yeah, I've gotten several clients on that waiver in similar situations, so I'm glad to hear that. Thank you for your work.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Maureen.
Okay. All right. Any other comments from the commission on the case presentation? All right. So our next agenda item was one that was going to need to be discussed in executive session because it involves a human resources matter. And because Commissioner Shayet has had to leave the call unavoidably, we do not have enough commissioners to go into executive session. So I'm going to have to skip that agenda item, and we'll look into scheduling a separate meeting to have that conversation. So the final item on our agenda is public comment. Do we have any comment from members of the public?
Yes, this is Maureen.
All right, go ahead, Ms. Walsh.
Yeah, thank you for allowing me to make public comment and also for my points of clarification during the meeting. I just was curious, it's kind of a comment more than anything. I'm kind of curious. I know that several counties have closed their trials due to COVID, and I didn't really hear any discussion about that in the budget projections. So I'm just curious. I'll follow up with Commissioner Lesko and Ms. Alvarez regarding this, but with a decline of cases, jury and fees will be going down. I'm curious how that affects that. And also I'm curious, I didn't see anywhere in any of the documents, any information on the Colorado Civil Rights Division, the CCRD complaint that I filed for the Office of Public Guardianship. So just for the record, I wanted to reflect in there that was submitted. And per the letter I received, Ms. Alvarez had until December the 10th approximately to respond to that complaint. And I haven't received anything yet from the division, but I think it's an important item for the public and for the commissioners to know about. So thank you very much. I hope everyone stays safe and healthy over the holidays. And thank you for your service to Colorado.
Thank you, Ms. Welsh. With regard to the complaint, I am not going to make any comments on that because we're represented by counsel in that matter. Do we have any further public comment?
This is Jim Tatton, and I don't have any public comment today, but thank you for allowing me to listen. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you for joining us once again.
Hi, this is Ann McKenzie with Silver Key Senior Services in Colorado Springs. We primarily do pro bono work here at Silver Key, and we do some private pay guardianships. And I was just curious as to the future of the Office of Public Guardianship and being able to look at the needs across the state and to be able to determine that this program be expanded to the entire state. I'm just wondering, I know you guys are really early, early on in this, and then also I applaud the work of the story that you told about the gentleman. I think it's just amazing. I have stories like that myself, of just helping people really literally find a new place in their life and be able to have a quality life. So I applaud you for your work that you're doing, and then if you could just comment on the future of the Office of Public Guardianship and how that might look.
Well, thank you for that. You know, right now what this office is, you know, statutorily, it is a pilot program for essentially the Denver Judicial District. Once we go through the pilot program, submit a report to the General Assembly, then the it'll be a legislative determination whether or not this office will go statewide. You know, I think that, you know, as we were, you know, working to get this office established and setting up this office, the commission believes that this should be a statewide office, that the need is there. All of the commissioners are here because we work in this field. We see the need. So I think that, you know, we're hoping to go statewide, but that would be a determination of the General Assembly. Sophia, do you have anything you want to add?
Thank you. I can add that we've hired a research assistant, and we're presently working on kind of designing the data gathering that's going to be included for that director report to the General Assembly that Chair Lesko just mentioned. And so, of course, as part of that research and data gathering, we will be looking across the state to different entities, organizations, stakeholders, in order to kind of assess the need across the state. And, of course, Ms. McKenzie, if you have any suggestions for us, feel free to reach out to me separately. We could possibly work on some sort of partnership for that data gathering in your area as well.
And then just one more thing, if I may. I had the opportunity to meet with you, Ms. Alvarez, and so appreciated that time. And I know with the COVID that there's a lot of things, you know, that are not happening. There was an advisory, is it a board or a council? I don't know if they're currently meeting. I know I had requested to be a part of that if possible. And I didn't know how to go about becoming a part of that when it is happening.
Yes, there will be applications going out for individuals that want to be on the stakeholder advisory panel. So I have you on my list, so I'd definitely be sending that out to you. That will also be posted on our OPG website. Hopefully within the next couple of months, that application will be available. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, this is Maureen Welch. I just wanted to make one follow-up comment, if possible.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I'm glad that the member of the public from Colorado Springs brought up the stakeholder list, because I meant to mention that in my comments. I'm a little bit confused as to nowhere on that chart of potential stakeholders are there individual family members like myself who have at-risk adults in their family. And I think that's a really important stakeholder group to reach out to. So I would urge the commission to include individuals and not just organizations, because people experience this in their life, and to hear a firsthand lived experience, you need to talk directly to families, individuals who are in the statutory definition of at-risk adults. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Welsh. Sophia, do you wish to make any comments to that? Because I know this is something that you will be having those type of outreach as well.
Yes, I'm looking for my attachment for stakeholder groups.
Yeah, Michelle, I think I can tell you that the commission is aware of the importance of individuals with lived experience in stakeholders outreach.
I'm sorry, Chair Lesko. I didn't catch.
Yeah, I was just trying to buy you some time there to find your sheet.
Yes. We do have clients listed, potential clients and vulnerable groups listed as potential stakeholders, and also advocacy agencies and direct service providers. I don't know that I thought of listing individuals separately, but that I can certainly go back and look at my stakeholder groups that I have listed out and revise that if needed.
Yeah, I think families and friends of people who fit the definition are reasonably included as a stakeholder, and I've been involved in this group for years, and so typically I'm not on the list right now, so I'd appreciate being expanded to be included. Thank you.
All right, do we have any further public comment? All right, hearing none, is there any further comment from the commission?
Nope.
All right, then.
Nope.
I will hear a motion to adjourn.
I so move. This is Commissioner Zinn.
And I will second that.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, we are adjourned. Thank you so much, everyone, for attending the meeting today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great.